Welcome to the Pew Podcast, everybody. Before we dive into this episode, I want to talk to you guys about Ready Nutrition. Ready Nutrition, protein water. You guys need it. I'm telling you, you need it. I have a special offer for all my listeners. If you head to teamready.com, that is TEAMREADY.com, and grab yourself some Ready Nutrition water, some protein water. I'm telling you guys need it. If you're a busy guy like me bouncing gym to gym, or if you want a quick 15 grams of protein, get you some. I'm telling you, you guys won't regret it. If you enter the referral code ANTHONYP20, that's ANTHONYP20, saves you 20% off. I'm telling you guys, head there, grab some water, you won't regret it. I know you're going to love this episode. Let's dive into it. All right, everybody, what's up? Welcome back to the podcast. Today, I have somebody a little bit different. Up to this point, I've had all basketball coaches, basketball trainers, different basketball personnel, and outside of Max McCoy, who was kind of a psychology guy, which I was happy to get on. But today, we got Julian Locasto, and he's a diet coach. He's a strength coach. He does all that, and that's kind of why I really, really wanted to have him on. Number one, because I love the work he does. And number two, I think that any coach or player that listens to this could really benefit, from doing the services he provides, because of I'm a big, big fan and believer in that idea of diet, being that X factor and being that thing that a lot of players lack. And personally speaking, I know when I kind of flipped the script and I focused more on my nutrition and my strength and conditioning and all that, my game on the court completely changed. So first and foremost, man, I appreciate you hopping on. And I'm kind of going to give you the little bit in the beginning just to kind of tell people your background, tell them, what got you into this and the type of stuff you do. And then we'll dive right into it.
Yeah, man. Thank you. I appreciate the great intro. But yeah, man, long story short, I kind of like to tell people I like to give you the 20-minute version of my story rather than the half hour to 45-minute version. Basically just a small town kid over in Paterson, New Jersey, grew up playing the game of basketball and just all a bunch of other sports. But basketball was really my true love. And, I was blessed and fortunate enough to play at the high school and collegiate level over at St. Joseph Regional High School, and also at Caldwell University, a small Division II school. Walked on there, had a great opportunity with the game of basketball, but at one point I realized at 5'9", probably wasn't going to go to the NBA, so decided to look into other avenues. At the time, I was really interested in physical therapy. I was really interested in fitness. I myself had dabbled a little bit into bodybuilding. So, growing up a skinny basketball player, bodybuilding was a completely different realm for me. But being so skinny, being really not so strong, not so physically gifted on the basketball court, I could jump with the best of them. But I was super fast, but I was not super strong, not super built. So bodybuilding was a different realm for me, and it gave me that avenue and gave me a different passion for fitness and trying to get more in tune with my body and learn the ins and outs of how the body works. And that's also where my love for nutrition came in as well. So because I know myself when during my playing days, as soon as I got myself into the weight room and as soon as I got myself more in tune with my diet, my game completely changed. I like to tell people, it gave me that extra oomph, per se, to get into the collegiate ranks. From there, I was blessed. I was given the opportunity to work at a physical therapy clinic for the past 5 years over in Wayne, New Jersey. And that's where I linked up with Jerry DiFilippo over at Challenger Strength over in Wayne, New Jersey. And, I like to tell people, the rest is history. I headline now the strength and conditioning. I run a lot of the performance aspect stuff out of there with the New Jersey Hitmen, which is a hockey program. And we train a lot of the local athletes around the tri-state area for multiple sports, baseball, basketball, football, and you name it, we got it. I also headline the Challenger Strength Nutrition, which is also really big, starting to grow now. And, you know, like I said, the rest is kind of history, man. That's kind of how I got into what we're doing right now.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned Jerry, because I follow him, and, you know, I don't obviously don't know him real well, but I follow his stuff, and his stuff is the same. It's awesome. You know, I think you guys together, you could tell you guys make a good team, you know, between the two of you. But a couple things. So first one, did you always – I guess here's the question. It's kind of a loaded question, but here's what I'm thinking. Did you always, you know, watch what you eat and try to, you know, eat for performance, quote unquote, or were you just kind of like everyone else in terms of, you know, just kind of ate what you wanted to? And because you figured, hey, I'm an athlete, I'm gonna go practice, I'll be fine, you know, da 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 da. And then if you didn't, you know, when you did decide, okay, like you kind of briefly mentioned it, but like, okay, I'm gonna lock in now on my nutrition. Can you explain a little bit more in detail of how much that changed and how much that helped? Because that's what I tell players I work with today is I made that flip probably my sophomore year in high school. Because up until then, I was eating the standard kid diet. You know, I was eating fast food. I was eating, you know, fried food, whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. And I made that switch. And it's funny because the one day, I don't even know why it really happened. The one day I was at the track and I was running and I was really tired. And I was thinking, man, if I'm going to keep doing all this work, you know, it, on the court, in the weight room, you know, in the track, and then I'm going to go home and I'm going to eat like crap, then that kind of offsets, you know, what I'm doing, I feel like. You know, and that's probably not true, but mentally that's where I was at. That's where I was thinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I was like, what is the point, you know, of doing this? I got to clean it up. And I remember I cleaned it up. And man, I mean, I never got tired. I was in the best shape of my life. It changed everything for me. So if you can you kind of briefly talk about that and your experience with it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, my experience is like, I guess, is a little different than most athletes. I mean, growing up, I was very, very fortunate. My mother is an amazing cook. So I never really went hungry, I like to tell people. So I grew up in a very old school Italian household. So food was never the issue. Food was always there. My mom, I like to tell people, my mom cooks for an army of at least 20 people when there's only like four of us in the house. So food was never a problem. And my thing was, you know, I feel like a lot of kids nowadays are not getting enough of the home cooked meals. Which I, on the other hand, was very fortunate. I had all the time. So I could never really sit here and tell you that, you know, I was that kid that had Lunchables every day for lunch. But I benefited more from having those homegrown meals. And I never really had an issue when it came to eating well. I would say I had a good balance of, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, the basic three meals. And I, you know, I did very well for myself. The issue that I had growing up was, you know, I could never really gain a pound. And that was my problem. And I feel like for most hoopers, that is a big issue because it's such an aerobic dominant sport. Because we're constantly running up and down the floor. Like we're constantly burning calories, and it's such a grueling game in terms of being able to put on weight. I noticed that was definitely my problem. I'm built like a freaking track runner. So it's like one of those things where I was built like a track runner and I couldn't gain a pound to save my life. And I'm like sitting there, like literally wondering to myself, like, how am I going to put on weight? Like, I'm going into the college game now. It's like, I'm going to be going up against big bodies. Like, I need to be able to, you know, muscle my way to the rim if I have to. But, you know, when you're 5'9" and you're really skinny, you're like 130 pounds soaking wet, it's kind of hard to put on some weight. You know, that's where my nutrition, I really had to dial in. I had to look at the things that I was doing. And it's like, am I truly eating enough? And that's the thing that I feel most athletes struggle with today is they don't necessarily have a grasp on how much they're actually taking in a single day.
Yeah.
A lot of guys, like you said, I mean, a lot of people fall victim, and you said it yourself, you know, you fall, a lot of kids fall victim to the whole, well, oh, if I eat all this crappy food, I could literally just go on the court and burn it off, or I could go to the track and I could burn it off. Like, a lot of that is like kind of the culture in nutrition nowadays with athletes. And I think a lot of the things we need to do going forward is kind of flip the script. And we need to really go ahead and look at it from a point of view of, is this food that I'm going to be taking in something that could benefit my performance? Is this something that, you know, if I eat it, is it going to be that top quality fuel? Because I think, if anything, that was kind of the thing that I kind of flipped once I got in. Instead of, you know, the pastas, the chicken cutlets, you know, your classic Italian food, like, I kind of switched it up from more of that kind of thing to more of, you know, the rices, the potatoes, the lean protein, like, all of that. I feel like it was more of changing the quality of my fuel rather than the quantity. And I feel like that's a big switch that a lot of kids need to make nowadays growing up in the game, is you have to look at it from this perspective. Your body is I like to say your body is like a Ferrari. It's like a sports car. And, you know, we can get by with the regular gas. We could get by with the regular fuel. But if you want to perform at an elite level, we have to think like a top sports car. We have to be putting in that premium fuel. We have to be putting in that premium gas. So I think that's really the switch that I made in terms of my nutrition. I went from, you know, eating what I was eating normally from my household, and I went and I switched it to more premium quality food. And I noticed that once I started to make that switch, I started to get a lot more full when I ate, because, you know, a lot of the biggest things that the foods that kids like today, they are hyper palatable foods. And what I mean by that is, you know, basically, I could tell you right now, I could go order a pack of Oreos and I could literally scarf it down in 2 seconds and not be full. But if I tell you that, you know, I'm going to give you this premium cut steak with potatoes and vegetables, and I tell you to eat that whole meal, most likely you're going to get full by the end of the meal.
Yeah.
So hyper palatable foods is something that I feel like the culture growing up nowadays in sports is something that's overpopularized. So like your McDonald's, your Burger King, your fast food, your vending machine foods that you find at most schools, high schools, stuff like that. Those are all hyper palatable foods. They're foods that we can eat at large quantities, and it's not going to satiate us. It's not going to fill us up. You know, our high quality protein, our carbs, our vegetables, are foods that contain micronutrients. A lot of those foods are going to be foods that are going to fill us up really quickly.
Yeah, and something you mentioned that in the beginning, a couple things I want to take out of that, but what you mentioned in the beginning when you got to college, you're like, I need to make a change. You know, I'll tell you a story, and it's embarrassing, but it's an honest story. When I stepped foot on campus, you know, before obviously we started our weight room stuff and our strength and conditioning stuff, we got our weight, you know, taken, and we kind of had meetings with the strength coaches and all that. And my first day on campus, now, in my defense, this was after, you know, we did a lot of running. There was a lot of conditioning before this, and I wasn't really, I mean, I thought that I was in good shape, and then I went to college and I realized I'm not in that great of shape. But so we walk into the weight room one day, and, you know, he has to scale out, and I go step on the scale, and I weighed 125 pounds. And I remember that day my strength coach looked at me and was like, are you serious? And, like, I thought at first he was, you know, it was like a joke. And I kind of, like, you know, laughed, and he was like, hey, like, I'm going to be honest with you, this is not going to fly. And he was, like, being 100% serious. There was nothing, you know, funny about it. And me and him became real good friends. I would lift before practice. I'd lift after practice with the team. I'd come back and lift again, because obviously I was working on my basketball skill as well, but I knew that I needed that just to be able to survive in practice. I mean, we had drills where, you know, it would be me against a 7-footer, you know, in a rebounding drill. And there was no, okay, you know, let's let, you know, Ant get out and put someone else in. It was, no, Ant, get the rebound. You know, I don't care how big you are. I don't care how big he is. Figure it out. So it was one of those things. And like you mentioned, I thought I ate a lot. I was one of those guys. Oh, man, I can't gain weight. You know, I'm not, I eat a ton. I eat everything, da, 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 da. And my strength coach was like, well, what'd you have for breakfast? And I tell him, well, what'd you have before you came here? Oh, well, I haven't ate since breakfast. You're going to start eating in between breakfast. And, you know, and he would help me. And at my heaviest, when I was in college, I was 160 pounds, and I looked and felt unreal. I mean, I was strong. I looked good. I felt good. I was in great shape. And that just goes to show that I put on all that size and all that strength, and a lot of it was my diet. You know, obviously the weight room stuff was huge for me as well, but a lot of that stuff was my diet. And that's why I tell players all the time, because there's some high school kids that I work with that aren't even in the weight room. They don't even lift, and they want to go play college basketball. And I'm like, here's the deal. I'm not the guy, you know, to help you with that, because I'm a basketball, you know, I'm a on-court, you know, player development coach. That's not – I love, you know, to this day, I love being in shape. I work out every day. I love it, but – that's not my field of expertise. You know what I mean? I'm not going to try to put my toe in somewhere where I'm not confident that I can help. So I'm like, you need to go find someone, or need to go, you know, do something, do some research, figure it out, because if you don't, you're going to get eaten up. And I say that with love. You could be the best basketball player in the world, but if you can't, you know, move some weight and hold your own, it really doesn't matter. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I can tell you from you know, I can relate to that heavily, just because, you know, I myself was kind of the same way. Not so much in a sense where I would like skip meals, but I was more along the lines of I needed to eat like 2 or 3 massive meals a day, just because that's what I grew up on. But, you know, the same questions that your strength coach asked you is literally like, it's like looking at myself now for what I do with my athletes. It's literally like what I ask my athletes on a daily basis. Yep. Like, I'll look at them, and like, if I notice within the first several minutes during warmups that they're not at 100%, I'm asking them questions like, dude, did you eat today? Like, what's going on? Like, how's your mood? Like, do you have a bad day at school? Like, yeah. What's going on? Did you eat before you came here? Like, and most of them will tell me like, oh, I haven't eaten since lunch. And like, it'll be like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They'll be like, I haven't eaten since like 12. I'm like, dude, you got to eat something. Like, you can't be coming in here with nothing fueling your body. Like, at the end of the day, I feel like the biggest problem with kids that have issues gaining weight is they're not keeping track of how much they're putting into their body in comparison to what they're putting out. A lot of athletes, in terms of at least what I deal with, a lot of them come to me and they're like, what else can I be doing to get better? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the guys think that means they either need to be out on the court, they need to be out on the field, they need to be out on the ice more. And I'm like, dude, no. You got to be looking at the stuff that you're doing outside of the game.
Yes.
Like, you need to be looking at your nutrition. You need to be looking at your sleep. You need to be looking at your hydration. You need to be looking at, you know, what are you doing in the weight room? Like, these are things that are very minute details that can be taking your game to a whole different level, and you don't even realize it. I feel not even just with the nutrition stuff. I mean, like, going to the bare minimum stuff. Like, are you even sleeping at night?
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Kids nowadays are so in tune with electronics and the video games, the TV, the Netflix. Like, kids are up till like 12, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. And then they have to get up at like 5, 6 a.m. to go to school now that school is in session. Like, you got classes every morning. Like, dude, like, you're getting like 4 or 5 hours of sleep, if anything, if that's the case. And then you're wondering why your performance is suffering on the court or wherever the case may be. It's like, you're not even taking care of your body I like to tell people, like, listen, at the end of the day, if you're not doing the small things, then don't expect to be, you know, playing on Friday nights when the big lights are on.
Yeah, because and not to cut you off, but you have me think of a question that is very, you know, relevant. Now, you mentioned that kids are always asking, you know, what they could, you know, do better, do more of, and then, you know, with the idea of them under eating, have you ever, you know, suggested, and I kind of already know the answer to this question, but have you ever suggested maybe they, you know, count their calories, you know, count their macros, stuff like that? Because I know that was really, really helpful for me when I was in school. I started, you know, doing that, and then that really showed, wow, I'm not really eating anything. You know, I'm eating like 1800 calories a day. That's embarrassing. So do you recommend that or do you not recommend that? Because here's my follow-up with that. So I graduated college with a degree in sports psychology. So I took a ton of psychology classes, and it was funny because when I was in college was when I was real heavy, you know, into counting, you know, calories and counting macros, just because I'm one of those guys that if I tell you I want you to do it, I'm going to do it too. You know, like I'm going to show you, not I'm going to tell you, you know. So I was experimenting with that, and we were learning about how sometimes that could almost be unhealthy because you get too, you know, obsessed with things like that. And I'll be honest, that's my personality, right? I get obsessed with things, and I get dialed into things. And for me, it became like I couldn't eat something without, you know, tracking it and counting the calories and all that. And it became kind of like, okay, you know, you got to dial it back a little bit. So do you recommend that, or do you think they should maybe just try a little bit to have an idea of what they're eating, or what's your stance on that?
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, you hit on a bunch of good points there, especially from the psychological aspect of it. The biggest thing that I like to tell people in terms of the importance of tracking your calories and tracking macros, I'm a big believer in it, obviously, just because of the actual scientific benefits from a nutrition standpoint. Obviously, if you know what you're putting in your body and how much, more than likely you'll understand why your body is reacting in a certain way. So if I know that I'm in a caloric surplus, I know for a fact that I'm eating more calories than I need to put on weight. If I'm not eating anywhere near that number, then I can't be wondering why the weight isn't going up. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, it's one of those things where it's more just from a standpoint of, if you have a specific goal in mind, that's the best way. If you're one of those kind of guys, though, that if you're just kind of eating just for overall general health, there are obviously little guidelines you can follow for general health purposes. But if you're a high level athlete, or if you're somebody who has a goal in mind, tracking calories is probably the easiest way to go. But I always like to tell people it's more of a means to an end kind of thing. I always tell people, like, listen, it's not the end all be all. Like, there are other ways you can go about doing it. If it's just not for you, because you know what, at the end of the day, it's not for everybody. And I like to pride myself on being flexible with my approach. You know, I come from an educational background. Obviously, I was a high level advanced biology major in college, and I also have an extensive background. I'm a sports nutrition certified under precision nutrition, which is like probably one of the bigger nutritional certifications out there. I am by no means a dietitian, so obviously I can't, like, you know, prescribe diets, but one of the biggest things that they preach in that certification is the use of hand measurements for food for people that kind of don't like to do the whole macro tracking thing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, so you could do hand portion sizes. You can do Jessica Isaacs, who is now the dietitian for UCLA basketball. She's actually pretty huge in terms of using performance plates. Those are other areas that are pretty big too as well. Basically, you know, having different portions on plates and using different plate sizes. in order to track portion sizes rather than tracking macros. And, you know, a lot of people have had success with that in terms of athletes just by getting certain plates, certain portion sizes out there to help in terms of making sure they're getting the ideal nutrient ratios in to make sure that they're fueling themselves for certain demands that are going to be placed on them for the sport. But the biggest thing that I like to tell people is I like macros from a sense that, one, it helps you get to your goal. Two, it helps you, if you do it long enough, it can prepare you for more of a life of intuitive eating. So basically what I mean is, you know, after a while, like, listen, I've been tracking my macros now for, I want to say, like 7 or 8 years. I could literally look at a plate now and I can tell you if that steak is really 6 or 7 ounces.
Yes.
Because I've just done it so many times. I could literally, and you know, I'm pretty much on point at this point. I'm not completely 100% accurate, but I'm pretty much on the money when it comes to like guesstimating what something is, just because I've been doing it for so many years. And that's what I tell people. I'm like, if anything, macros is just training you to have more of an intuitive eye for how much you're actually putting into your body. Is that the ideal way if you have a specific goal? No. But I like to tell people, listen, it's kind of like a way of training your body or training your mind into kind of knowing how much food you're actually putting on your plate. When in reality, if you're somebody who just starting out, if I'm working with a kid like brand new, fresh, and I tell him to start logging his food, 9 times out of 10, I could put a glass of milk in front of him and I could ask him how many ounces is in there. Probably can't even tell me how much. So that's why I tell people, you know, when you're first starting out, I think 100% tracking calories, tracking your macros is a must if you have a goal.
Yeah, and I, it's something I want, I'm happy, this is a perfect segue to where else I wanted to go, because number one, I 100% agree with that, and that, like I said, it helped me a ton. I mean, it definitely didn't hurt me, but it just got to the point, like I said, where I was so dialed in. I wanted to hit my numbers, I wanted to hit everything, and that's just the kind of the personality that I have. So it was like, okay, Anthony, you gotta dial it back a little bit, you're getting a little too into this. But to this day, it helped me a ton. But something else I wanted to ask you, you know, in terms of the macros and the flexible dieting, quote unquote, what is your take on that? Because I know kids see, you know, YouTube people, fitness people, whoever you want to call them, and they're eating Pop-Tarts and things like that, but they quote unquote, you know, fit their macros. And I know I'm not one to say cut stuff out, because that's setting yourself up for failure. You're going to end up, you know, potentially hurting yourself long term down the road, but I feel like sometimes people take advantage of that and they're not eating, you know, full nutritious food, especially, like I said, we're talking about athletes, you know, not the average person. We're talking about athletes here. So what is your take on that? And do you see that a lot in your line of work or not as much?
You're literally preaching right now, man. Yeah. Like I literally see this on a day-to-day basis. I'm obviously not going to use names, but I'll give you an example. I'm actually working with a young athlete right now. He's a hockey player. He's 15 years old, and, I actually just started working with him, so I could give you examples of like kind of his progression so far. The kid used to, I literally am not lying. He used to come up before he would come for lifts and would down an entire bag of candy before he came to lift, and then wondered why his stomach would hurt halfway through the session. And I'd be like, well, dude, like your equivalent of a pre-workout meal is candy like 10 minutes before you come up here. Like that, it, like, I think from what you hit on, you know, they look at a lot of these guys on Instagram, and you know, we have obviously TikTok now. There's a lot of influencers. I say that in quotations because, you know, there's a lot of guys out there that are preaching the junk food around training or recovery to boost muscle glycogen levels and insulin levels to spike, you know, to do all this stuff for muscle growth. And it's like, I think a lot of kids need to understand the like kind of like what I was alluding to in the beginning. I think you just have to think in the long term of, is what I'm putting into my body really going to make me feel good? And when it comes to the whole macro portion of it all, I always tell people I like to live by the 80-20 rule. And I think it's a pretty good rule to follow. 80% of what you put in your body should be that high quality, high premium octane fuel. So it should be the more of your high quality foods. The 20% is what I like to call your non-negotiables. So what I do with a lot of my clients is when I first start with them, I tell them to give me a list of their non-negotiables, meaning foods that they absolutely love that they can't live without. So if an athlete tells me that they have a weakness for sweets, and let's say in particular they love Oreos. I'll give you myself, for example, because I'm a huge Oreo guy. Yeah. I can't live without my Oreos. At least once a week, I need to have a couple Oreos. You know, if you're living by that 80-20 rule, 80% of my diet is absolutely filled with the lean cut meats, the, you know, the complex carbohydrates, your fiber, your vegetables, your micronutrients, your fruits, your veggies. 80% of my diet is filled with that. My 20% is that Oreos, my non-negotiables. And the reason I like to have non-negotiables in a diet is strictly for adherence. I think the biggest, and if we're going to go into more like what you kind of alluded to in the beginning, the psychological component of it
yes,
all.
Yes.
Psychologically speaking, if we have a diet that we can adhere to long term, we're going to be able to stick to it far longer than something if I were to write up a diet. That's why I don't write up diets. A lot of people come to me and they ask me, well, why don't you just write me up a diet? And I'm like, I don't want to do that because at the end of the day, you're not going to stick to it because I don't know what you like. I don't know what you don't like. I don't know what any of your non-negotiables are. So I tell people I can write you up a diet, but in 2 weeks, if you don't like the food that I give you, you're going to start cheating. You're going to start eating what you want. Like, it's going to be one of these issues where you're constantly falling off the wagon. It's not going to be sustainable long term. But if I give you non-negotiables, if I give you that little wiggle room and I tell you, okay, these are my preferred sources. And, you know, I give all my athletes basically an ideal menu. So I give them a menu of food that I believe are high quality sources that are going to help them with their performance. And I tell them, listen, go through this list, pick out your favorite foods. I want you to pick out your favorites from here. You could cook them however you want, but these are the foods that I really like for you in terms of your performance. And I allow them to do that so that way their 80% is the 80% that they absolutely love. And then I tell them, listen, give me your non-negotiables, give me that 20%, and then let's find a way that we can mesh this into one good plan to where we can keep you on something that you can sustain long term. And I think from a psychological standpoint, like we were getting to, if it's food that you actually enjoy, you're going to keep to it long term. So I like the whole 80-20 rule from that aspect because it allows athletes, it allows people to be a little bit more, they become a little bit more adhered to the program. And you know, if it's something that you absolutely love, it's probably something that you're going to stick to long term. So that's kind of like my two cents on like the whole, like kind of like if it fits your macros in a sense. Mm-hmm. No, it's more along the line of if it fits your macros, but I'd structure it in a way where you're not going out of control.
And just to touch on that, not to cut you off, but this from the psychological point of view, what I learned, you know, in college was, and again, I'm not, you know, a dietitian, nutritionist. I'm none of that. I'm a basketball coach, but I do have a degree in psychology, and we learned about, you know, the different food psychology, I guess we can call it. And the idea that you tell yourself, you know, I can't have this, or I can't do this, or I can't, you create, you know, a mental block almost, and it becomes like, if you eat this, then you're bad. You know, it's bad. You know, and that's something else I wanted to talk to you about, and we'll dive into that next, is that good versus bad, because that's not right. That's a bad way to look at things. But oftentimes people look at things that way. But so my whole aspect, and I actually had a classmate, you know, in college, and she was studying to become I can't remember. It wasn't a dietitian, but it was something on the psychology end of food. I can't remember what it was called, but because she suffered from an eating disorder, you know, she said that she the content she would take in on online, and she learned, oh, sugar's bad. I can't eat sugar. I can't eat this. I can't eat that. She said, so I created, you know, this imaginary, not real enemy, quote unquote, in my mind. And she's like, now I can't eat, you know, a donut because I think I'm going to get fat and I think I'm going to, you know, lose all my progress. And she was really like, you know, crazy in terms of she really wouldn't eat certain things because she truly thought they were going to be detrimental to her health. And so she was like, when I finally was able to kind of conquer that, I wanted to learn about it and to be able to help other people, you know, battle that. And that's something that, like I said, I learned. So whenever I'm talking to any athlete or even any person and they, oh yeah, I never eat this or I never eat that, I go, you can't have that attitude, because what you're doing is you're setting yourself up for a long-term serious issue. I mean, eating disorders are serious problems, and especially among athletes, you know, nowadays with, like you mentioned, with people you see on the internet who, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're probably on some type of steroid. I mean, I hate to say that, but you know what I mean. They're not getting the way they, you know, they look on hard work and diet. You know, they're getting that way a different way. So you're comparing yourself to something that's unattainable. You know, so that's always my biggest thing with athletes is, obviously, like you mentioned, 80-20, I love that. But don't ever, you know, label things as good versus bad. Because if you do that, you're going to have a problem, you know, throughout your entire life.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I think, you hit on a lot of good points. I think the problem with diet culture in general is people, like you said, they label foods good or bad. And I think we need to kind of flip the script on this. And instead of labeling foods good and bad, I like to tell my athletes, let's label foods differently. Let's label them, instead of good and bad, let's label them high quality nutrient dense and low quality nutrient dense. Yep. Meaning,
love
that. The high quality stuff is going to be stuff that's going to help me on the court. The low quality stuff is going to be stuff that I can enjoy once in a while, but it's not really going to help me if I need to go eat it before a game. So I like to tell people that, label it more along those lines. And that way you don't really create not necessarily a bad image of that food, but you know, in the back of your mind, like, listen, if I have this before a game, it's probably not going to make me feel good. So I like to tell people, yes, you can enjoy those. We have our 80-20. We have that. But understand that there are crucial time periods where we can't have that. So understand, like, listen, if at the end of the day we're a high-performing vehicle and we need to get from point A to point B, I don't want to have to make pit stops for more fuel halfway through. I want to know that this fuel is going to last me the entire ride. And that ride is essentially our game, our game day, our practice, our hard session in the gym. Like, I want to make sure that the fuel that I put in is going to last me, and I'm not going to stall halfway through. So it's one of those things where, instead of labeling food good and bad, I just like to tell kids, listen, is this, at the end of the day, ask yourself that question. If I have this before a game, am I going to feel good during the game, or is it going to hurt my performance? At the end of the day, that's probably a better way to label the food. But at the end of the day, if we go down this rabbit hole of labeling food good and bad, like you said, there is some psychological parts of it that are not going to be good in the long run.
And that's exactly it. And that's why, like I said, I struggle, you know, with that, even personally, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not even speaking, you know, from an athlete perspective, even myself, because of the content you take in. You know, obviously I'm on social media, you're on social media, everyone's on social media, and you look at things and this is bad, that's bad. Like, you don't even know what to eat anymore because everything's bad. You know what I mean? And especially this idea, too, between, like, the low-carb, no-carb, keto, high-carb, you know, all the different diets. I just feel like it could be so overwhelming, you know, to athletes just because.
That's definitely another one. I don't mean to cut you off, that's definitely another one that I'm seeing, especially if we're going to talk from an athlete perspective. I think the whole epidemic with the no-carb diets, especially among a lot of professional athletes that I see, you know, we have a lot of guys that are either going completely vegan now or low-carb, they're doing keto diets. You know, I think athletes need to understand that the whole carbs are the enemy thing. And, you know, when it comes to weight gain or cutting out or I think Instagram is really plaguing the youth in terms of the diet culture, just because a lot of these superstar athletes at the highest level are going to such diet extremes to look the part. And I think that's something that I want to hit real quick in terms of the younger athletes. I need them to understand that there's a difference between aesthetics and athletics. And, you know, looking the part because a coach says you have to look the part or you have to pass the eye test is not how you should be approaching your diet. Because at the end of the day, they're two different things. From a physiological profile, when we look at the game of basketball is played from two main energy sources. You have your anaerobic energy system and you have your aerobic system. Your anaerobic system is going to be what generates the energy that you need in order to use your muscles to generate those fast twitch things, like your jumps, your sprints, your quick burst of acceleration, deceleration during a game. Like, you need that energy source, and a lot of what gives you that energy source is the glycogen from the carbohydrates that you're putting into your body. And if you're somebody that goes on a low-carb diet or a ketogenic diet, you're not getting that fuel that you need in order to perform at that high level. And even like if we're talking vegetarian diets are great in the sense of, you know, micronutrients are huge. You know, they're so good for your body. But at the end of the day, you're not getting enough protein from a vegetarian diet. And that's another thing as an athlete, we need protein in order to help with the breakdown of muscle, the preservation of muscle, you know, all these things in relation to muscle protein synthesis. Like, in order for those things to happen in an athlete's body, we need to be taking in those high quality macronutrients, our carbohydrates and our protein. Those are two big areas that are going to be lacking for a lot of these athletes that are undergoing these dietary extremes with vegetarian or vegan and these ketogenic diets. And I think a lot of it is plaguing the youth because they're seeing a lot of it coming from the professional ranks.
Yeah, and something else too, when you were talking, and I don't know why I thought of this, but I think we also have to squash that idea of being in shape does not mean you have to be shredded. You know, like being in shape does not mean you have to be 3% body fat and, you know, all, you know, because I think that's another problem too. Some of these players are eating like bodybuilders. You don't eat like you're not a bodybuilder. You know, you're not. So I think that's something I see a lot of too is, okay, well, I want to gain weight or I want to get in shape. What should I eat? Okay, I'll just eat this, you know, this and this, and I'll eat this many meals a day, and I'll follow this guy's diet. And I'm like, don't do that. And again, I'm not even qualified to be giving that advice, but I just know personally, because I tried to do that. You know, I would try to find this diet or that diet. And I'll be honest, I tried keto about 2 years ago, and it was the worst thing I've ever done in my life. I mean, number one, I don't really understand where people are getting, you know, my energy levels are super high. You know, I feel great. I felt terrible. My workouts were terrible. I was in a bad mood. I had no energy. I just wasn't. I wasn't myself. And again, is that different for everyone? Absolutely. But I'm not gonna lie and say, oh yeah, you know, when I did it, it worked out for me, because I'm one to experiment with my body. You know, I use my body as a guinea pig. What works for me? I wasn't gonna go out and say, if it did work, everyone should do this. But I thought, ah, you know what? I got sucked in. I'll give it a try. And it was terrible. So that idea of, okay, I got to make sure that I look really, really good, because that means I'm in really good shape. I know a lot of people that look really, really good, and they're
can't do nothing.
they're unhealthy, and they're not in shape. They feel like crap. That, you know, but from the outside, you go, oh man, that guy looks really good, or that girl looks really good. But inside, they're miserable. So you can't, you especially as athletes, you can't base it off that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely, dude. I mean, and like you said, I mean, alluding to like the ketogenic diet, I think a lot of athletes are getting really hell-bent on going keto. I know, for example, I know a big athlete in the basketball realm that uses it is Kevin Love. Kevin Love is a big proponent of the ketogenic diet, because he said that it helped transform his game to model the new NBA style. And I'm like, dude, like, that's just so far from the truth. Like, he might feel good on it, but he might just do very well with fats. Like, a lot of athletes, a lot of athletes, like you said, people are very individual in the sense that some athletes can really benefit from a high fat diet and a very low carb diet. But at the end of the day, carbs are extremely important for the everyday athlete, because we're extremely active. In short, like, you know, we need glucose to live. Like, energy transfer depends on it. Tissues such as your brain and red blood cells, which can't make their own glucose, need continuous supply available for use. Like, our brain alone needs 130 grams of glucose a day just to function. And we can't get this from, we can't get this out of thin air. Like, we get this through our diet. So when carbohydrate intake is super low, or we're fasting, you know, gluconeogenesis and ketosis can provide what we need, assuming we have enough protein and fat to process. But without getting too far off topic, you know, carbs are the fastest acting source of energy transfer, but we don't store much of them. So that's why, you know, we absolutely need to rely on continuously supplying ourselves with carbohydrates.
And in a nutshell, carbs don't make you fat. carbs aren't bad for you. You know, because that's something I hear all the time too, even from everyday people, because people will ask me, just out of curiosity, you know, because I would consider myself in pretty good shape. You know what I mean? I think I feel pretty good, you know. So people would ask me, oh, what do you eat? I bet, you know, are you on keto? Or I bet you know, you're low carb. And I'm thinking, no, no, like I eat like a normal person. Now, do I eat out a lot? Not as much. I like to cook. I cook a lot of my own food, which I know that's a good thing too, because you know exactly what's going into it. Also, I eat a lot. You know, you look at me and you go, I bet, you know, he probably doesn't eat that much. I eat a lot, but I'm very active. You know, I'm active, you know, by myself when I work out in the morning. I'm active with players throughout the day. You know, I don't live a sedentary lifestyle. So I think that's important too, but it is funny those questions you get of, oh, I bet he eats this, or I bet he eats that, and it's like, you'd be shocked at what I ate, because it's not that serious. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, to that degree, you know, I like to tell people, I'm like, the biggest issue when it comes to the whole carbs is the enemy thing is, I think it stems mainly from two main issues. And I notice this more obviously along the lines of like fat loss clients, but it's, you know, one, people are overeating and not tracking their intake properly. And I mean, we alluded to that earlier. And then two, not understanding hunger cues. You know, part of the problem that I see with people, whether it be with their fat loss goals or muscle building goals, is people don't know how much food they're taking in on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, the first thing I do with a lot of my athletes or clients is have them start tracking their intake. Why? Because a vast majority of the people out there don't know how much they're really eating. You know, once they do, a lot of them kind of get that little wake-up call, seeing that they're probably taking in either way too much or way too little. And, you know, the problem is that most are told that if you want to lose weight, you have to cut carbs. But the carbs are not necessarily the problem. The problem is you're just overeating or you're in a caloric surplus causing you to gain that weight in the first place. And, you know, like I said, another problem is, you know, understanding hunger cues. I think the biggest thing, we're programmed from like a young age to kind of eat when we're hungry and stop when we're full, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. So like in the US, like we tend to unlearn this unwritten rule. And instead, we eat until we're full.
Yeah.
So throughout like different other cultures, like throughout like India, like Ayurvedic traditions, like they kind of advise people to eat until they're 75% full. Like the Japanese practice, I forget the name of it. I'm probably gonna butcher it, but it's hara hashibu, which is eating until you're about 80% full. And then there are so many different other Chinese, German, Muslim influences that literally talk about kind of indicating like excess eating is like kind of like a sin. And it's like, I forget, there's a German expression that basically says, tie off the sack before it gets completely full, or drink your food and chew your drink. Like, it's kind of like all these different things that are basically tying into the fact that people don't understand hunger cues anymore. And countries outside the US kind of emphasize that eating should kind of be pleasurable and done in the company of others. And if you're noticing any trend, like you can tell me, but you know, we here are consistently shoveling and overindulging, wondering why we have one of the largest obesity ratings in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it all stems from having an understanding of hunger cues.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, number one, that's great stuff, because I know personally I've been like, oh, you know, I'm pretty full, but I'm almost done, so I'm just gonna finish this.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep eating.
Yeah, yeah, and then when I finish it, I'm like, oh, my stomach hurts. I should have never finished that, you know. So I'm guilty of it, and everyone's guilty of it. But like you said, it's what you do, you know, long term. You know, what is sustainable.
Absolutely.
I'm happy you mentioned that, because like I said, with my own diet, I mean, yeah, do I watch what I eat? 100%. I'm not eating fast food, fried food, because I don't want that. You know, I know how that makes me feel. I know how that makes me, you know, think. It clouds my job. I don't want to be like that. So I 100% am very conscious about what I eat, but I'm not restrictive about what I eat. There's a difference
Absolutely.
Between the two. You know, so and I'm happy you mentioned that idea of overeating, because that's something that I think anybody could really relate to, because like I just mentioned, it's like, oh, I have about half of that left, but I'm pretty good. But I don't want to waste it, so I'm gonna finish it. And
yeah,
then you finish it, and it's like that little bit kind of sets you over the top. And it's crazy how that works.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely, it's crazy the way that it all ties together. And I mean, a lot of what I see when it comes to overeating is also just from the emotional ties of food. I feel like we always end up going back to the psychological component of it, but the emotional ties to food. Like, what's the first thing people do when they're upset or something of that nature? Like, they always end up resorting to food. Like, you know, instead of like taking it out on somebody else, they'd rather just eat food. Like, I feel like there's so many emotional ties, there's so many psychological ties to food. And then like you said, I mean, I feel like when it comes to the diet culture with athletes, you know, it's usually the opposite. It's not really necessarily like people need to lose weight. It's always the guys that need to gain weight or the girls that need to gain weight just because they need to put on the pounds for whatever, to kind of handle the stress from the game. You know, overeating in the athlete culture is very big in the sense that kids will literally stuff themselves till they can't breathe. And it's like, we're being told by coaches, by other parents, by other people that are watching us that we need to keep eating because we need to keep putting on that weight. But we're doing it to a sense of almost like a psychotic nature where like we're telling kids that they need to literally be stuffing themselves 24/7. And it almost becomes unsustainable at a point.
Yeah, well, and that's the number one thing. That's the generic answer you get from everybody. Oh, I want to gain weight. Oh, you got to eat more. Well, that's not that'd be like if a player came up to me and said, "Hey, you know, coach, I want to learn how to shoot," and I said, "Okay, you got to shoot more." Like, duh, we get that, but I came to you for a little bit more of a
the quality of the work,
a specific question, not a general, you know, answer. You know, so I think that that's something a lot of people struggle with. But I got one more question for you, something I always like to end with. So personally, what is one non-negotiable for you? Just something you do on a daily basis. It could be with diet. It could be just with your everyday routine. Just kind of something that you have to do day to day that is a, I guess we could call it almost like a routine. So what's your non-negotiable?
Attention to detail. That's what I tell my kids all the time. I'm like, you got to be attentive to the small things. And that's just for everything, not just diet, not just coming into the gym and putting in the work. It's everything you do in life. You know, I feel like, you know, some people just go through the motions in life and they just do like they listen. Like I have kids that come into the weight room. They, you know, they come in, they go through their warm up. Sometimes they half-ass it, but it's like, I feel like some people just go through the motions in life and they don't take into consideration putting in the attention to the small details. And I just preach that over and over to my kids. Like, listen, take into consideration the attention you put into the small details in everything you do in your life. And I can 100% tell you that if you do that, chances are you won't skip anything and you won't miss any steps. And you'll probably get somewhere that you never thought you'd ever be.
I love it. I love it. Before I let you go, tell everybody where to find you on social media, you know, all that good stuff, and then we'll get out of here.
All right, well, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. I've been a lot more active on Twitter lately because my partner, Jerry, literally tells me that I need to get on Twitter more. So, at Julian Locasto, JulianLocasto. You could use that for both Instagram and Twitter. You can find me on both of those platforms. I'm pretty much there daily. So,
awesome. Hey, thank you again. I appreciate you hopping on. We'll definitely stay in touch.
Yeah, man. Thank you again. I really appreciate your time, and thanks for having me on.
No problem. Have a good one.
You too, man.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Pew Podcast. If you guys want to know when new episodes come out, head over to the Apple Podcast app, subscribe to the podcast, and while you're there, leave us a review. That would help the podcast grow tremendously, and I'd really appreciate it. Lastly, make sure you guys are following me on all social media. So Twitter, I am at Anthony_Pew2, and Instagram, I'm at AnthonyPew2, and that's Pew, P-U-G-H. I appreciate your guys' support, and we'll catch you in the next one.